Hello, this is your Polycast for Wednesday, September 14th, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom. On today's edition, Hillary Clinton's running mate drops into the state, and the Allina nurses' strike shows no sign of ending. Democratic vice presidential candidate Tim Kaine made a brief visit to Minnesota yesterday to raise campaign cash and court college-age voters, Tim Pugmire reports.
On his way to a private Minneapolis fundraiser for the Hillary Clinton campaign, Kaine made an unannounced appearance at the University of Minnesota. The Virginia senator had conversations with dozens of students on a wide range of topics. Student Will Dahman told Kaine about his campaign for school board in his hometown of Annandale. Kaine told Dahman that they're now sharing the ticket.
I'm hoping that his turnout effort will sweep Hillary and me to victory in Minnesota, and maybe we can do some stuff in that to help you out too.
Absolutely.
Go get him.
Minnesota Republicans called on Kaine to tell voters whether he agrees with Clinton's recent description of some of Donald Trump's supporters as deplorables. Kaine did not answer reporter questions during the U of M stop. Tim Pugmire, Minnesota Public Radio News.
New census numbers show that Minnesota has one of the lowest poverty rates in the country. The state's official poverty rate was put at 9.1%, with almost 500,000 people in the state living in poverty last year. The state's poverty rate is lower than any other state except New Hampshire. It's also significantly lower than the national rate of 13.5%. While the poverty rate decreased nationally last year, it still hasn't fallen to pre-recession levels. Meanwhile, Minnesotans looking for jobs are generally finding it easier to land them. Martin Moylan has more.
Minnesota employers reported 97,600 job vacancies in the second quarter of this year. The Minnesota Department of Employment and Economic Development says that was slightly less than the number reported a year ago when job openings hit the second highest total on record. Oriane Casal is a labor market analyst at Deed.
We have the most job vacancies in healthcare and social assistance, accommodation and food service, and retail trade. Healthcare continues to be a growing industry, hiring lots and lots of people.
The ratio of unemployed people to job vacancies in the Twin Cities was 1-to-1. In Greater Minnesota, there were 1.3 unemployed people for each job vacancy. Martin Moylan, Minnesota Public Radio News.
Minnesota Republican lawmakers say new state pesticide directives designed to protect pollinators are causing anxiety among farmers. The House Agriculture Policy Committee questioned Governor Mark Dayton's administration about an executive order aimed at reducing use of pesticides that can be harmful to bees and other pollinators. The order contained 5 steps to reduce some plant applications and develop additional protection efforts. Browns Valley Republican Representative Jeff Backer says calls for increased inspection and enforcement are an insult to well-meaning farmers.
The farmers in my district and other parts feel like they are the enemy because the governor is on the offense and saying that, hey, you guys aren't doing your job.
Agriculture Commissioner Dave Fredrickson said that sentiment is misplaced.
I can guarantee you that he has the best economic interests of Minnesota agriculture in the forefront of his mind.
Parts of Dayton's late August order call for collecting more public comments on the plan. A demonstration against the Dakota Access Oil Pipeline project brought hundreds of protesters to downtown St. Paul last night, Matt Sepik reports.
The company building the line says it'll carry North Dakota crude to existing pipelines in Illinois, reducing the need for rail shipping. But the Standing Rock Sioux tribe filed suit to stop it, saying it'll disturb sacred sites. A protest encampment in North Dakota has drawn thousands of people. Darcy Menard of Red Wing was there, and also at the St. Paul demonstration, a member of the Cheyenne River Sioux tribe, Menard fears the line will leak and pollute the Missouri River.
There's no good to come of it. I mean, especially where they're trying to put it under the river. I mean, that river supplies my whole reservation. That's our supply water.
The pipeline company says it remains committed to the project, despite federal agencies calling for a temporary halt to construction on part of it. Matt Sepik, Minnesota Public Radio News.
A Minnesota renewable energy program has come under scrutiny from the World Trade Organization. Elizabeth Dunbar has the story.
The Made in Minnesota Solar Incentive Program was seen as a way to boost Minnesota solar energy and create jobs. but it's being questioned in a trade dispute between the United States and India. The U.S. government is trying to get the WTO to stop India from giving incentives to Indian solar firms. India is responding by saying Minnesota and several other U.S. states already have renewable energy policies that favor local companies. Ben Lilliston directs climate strategies at the Institute for Agriculture and Trade Policy.
So that's where this is a sort of legal battle. I think the thing to know is that past dispute panels have consistently ruled against these type of programs that give incentives to local businesses.
He says the dispute likely won't be resolved anytime soon. Elizabeth Dunbar, Minnesota Public Radio News.
A Twin Cities suburb that's been in the spotlight ever since an African-American man was shot to death by one of its police officers took a small but significant step toward change last night. St. Anthony Village leaders signaled their agreement, at least in principle, to join forces with residents and communities of color to investigate racial bias within the city's police department. Laura Ewan was at the city council meeting and filed this report.
The meeting started with a resolution designating an annual tradition, Kiwanis Peanut Day. Mayor Jerry Faust himself shelled out some cash for a bag of nuts.
It's probably some of the most expensive peanuts you buy. They go for a good cost.
Throughout the night, city leaders of this village of less than 9,000 people also tackled taxes and a bid for the water treatment plant. The last item on the agenda, however, was something the all-white council didn't have a lot of experience with, addressing racial bias in policing. But that night, back in July, when a St. Anthony police officer shot and killed Philando Castile in the nearby suburb of Falcon Heights, changed everything.
I don't know what Philando was thinking driving down that stretch of Larpenteur, because it's well known in the black community not to travel down that stretch of Larpenteur.
John Thompson, a familiar face to council members in his Philando baseball cap, was one of a handful of activists and residents who implored the St. Anthony City Council to work with the community to root out racial bias in the police department. Thompson was a friend of Castile and has been dutifully attending city council meetings pressing for change.
So, Mayor Faust, I beg you, it is serious. Like, we need to not be yelling at you. We need to not be yelling and talking to the city council members. We need to be in a room caucusing with each other, trying to figure out a solution to this problem, and not by putting crazy glue over a bullet wound. We need to fix this problem. There's a problem with police in these little towns.
Activists and residents are pushing for a task force with teeth. It would comprise city officials, residents, communities of color, and others to identify institutional bias even in the day-to-day routines of officers. Christine Lizdis is a white St. Anthony resident who's helping lead the effort. She says the bias could stem from seemingly benign department rules and regulations. But one thing's for sure, she said, this effort would need the buy-in of the police chief, John Mingseth.
If an endeavor like this is going to work and be successful and be meaningful and have teeth and truly change policing practices here in St. Anthony and provide a model for other communities that are struggling with this, that the chief has to provide real leadership on this. And I think that he has to jump into this 110%.
The chief wasn't present at the meeting. After listening to more than an hour of testimony, the mayor and city council members didn't take a vote. However, they all signaled their interest in forming the work group. It could encompass residents and officials from the two other cities at contract with St. Anthony for police services, Lauderdale and Falcon Heights. The mostly respectful give and take was a far cry from last week's city council workshop in Falcon Heights, where protesters shut down the event because they felt like they weren't being heard. At one point last night, Mayor Faust even told the audience, "We hear you." He also said no matter what prosecutors decide in whether to charge the St. Anthony officer who shot Castile, the city of St. Anthony would not drop the issue of exploring racial bias in policing. He said he wanted to build something that would stand the test of time. With that, the mayor also acknowledged some cultural blind spots and unfamiliar terrain for this small town government.
And this is something we're not used to doing. In terms, we can build roads, we can build water plants, we can do all kinds of grand things. But maybe we're not that good at some of the social issues.
With yesterday's meeting, though, city leaders and community members channeled a hope that they can work on those issues together. Laura Ewan, Minnesota Public Radio News, St. Anthony.
As the Allina nurses' strike enters its 10th day, neither side is showing any sign of giving in. The union says members are holding strong and lining up side jobs that provide income. Meanwhile, Allina Health says more nurses cross the picket line each day, and the company is prepared to use replacement nurses indefinitely. Lorna Benson has the story.
The picket lines outside five metro area hospitals are noticeably smaller this week. The Minnesota Nurses Association estimates that 1,200 nurses are picketing Allina now, compared to a showing of 2,500 nurses in the first days of the strike. But union spokesman Rick Fuentes says it's actually a good sign. It means many nurses have found nursing work elsewhere.
Including other hospitals. Some of them are getting hired temporarily at events such as the upcoming Ryder Cup.
The union doesn't track which members have found outside work during the strike, but Fuente says informally nurses are sharing stories with the union about the many ways they're making ends meet, from walking and grooming dogs to holding garage sales.
They're in it for the long haul. I mean, they've mentioned not being surprised if this takes 5, 6, 7 weeks.
Allina Health says it would be unfortunate if the strike lasted that long, but so be it if it does. However, a company spokesman says there's no guarantee Allina's last contract offer will remain on the table once talks resume. David Canahan says that offer addressed many of the nurses' concerns, but those provisions may not be economically viable since the company is now spending millions to replace strikers.
You know, the longer the strike goes on, it does reduce our flexibility somewhat at the bargaining table.
Allina won't say what it has spent on this strike, but a one-week walkout in June cost the company $20 million. The number of nurses crossing the picket line continues to grow and now stands at 457. However, the pace has slowed. It's not clear how much the strike is costing nurses either, because their weekly hours vary widely. No new negotiations have been scheduled since the strike began, and Canahan says Allina isn't inclined to request talks without some assurance that the union is willing to concede more on the one remaining sticking point, the company's proposal to shift nurses from their union-only insurance to the company's less expensive corporate plans.
We don't want to have a bargaining session that's not productive.
The rhetoric from both sides reinforces the likelihood of a drawn-out strike in the view of John Budd. He's a labor relations expert at the University of Minnesota.
You know, both sides have to sort of maybe experience some costs and some pain to get them back to the bargaining table and, you know, reminder of how unproductive it is to be without an agreement. And so sometimes these things just take a while to play through.
A mediator could call both sides back to the bargaining table at any time. But Bud says mediators usually want to see some movement first.
Sometimes a mediator just feels like, you know, the parties are too far apart and it's not going to be productive to bring them together.
As the strike wears on, the stakes will rise. On October 1st, striking nurses will lose their health insurance. And for Allina, each week that passes with no deal means the company has to extend the costly contracts of its replacement nurses. Covering health, I'm Lorna Benson. Minnesota Public Radio News.
And that's your Polycast for this Wednesday, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio Newsroom.